Is it reasonable to believe in a physical resurrection? It sounds crazy when you say it out loud, but is it as crazy as it may seem? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today on Whiskey in the Writings. And if this is a conversation you are interested in having, sit back, relax, grab your drink. Let's dive into the conversation. All right, for this special Easter edition of Whiskey in the Writings, I have broken back out this tequila that I got from Mexico when I was in Sayulita. And I know that it's Whiskey in the Writings, and we traditionally drink bourbon on this channel, but every now and then we break the mold and we introduce something different. And I've shared this tequila once before on a video, but it is a double Añejo. That's why you get the gold color. It's a double Añejo tequila. And this one's been aged in whiskey barrels. So this is a code 1316 Código 1316, extra Añejo. It's you can only get it in Mexico, or unless you get it shipped in, I guess. I've never seen it in the States, but it is a delicious whiskey because it's got some caramel flavor, not flavor, but just notes, this caramely notes. You get the oakiness of the barrels in a tequila, and it's just wonderful to sip on. This is not a shooting tequila. This is a sipping tequila, and whatever you have in front of you, it's all good. This is what I'm drinking today. I hope what you have is yummy too. But I've got also my Whiskey in the Writings tumbler glass. If you want one of these tumblers, you're interested in getting one for yourself, you can head over to the show notes, click the link there. It'll take you to a place where you can help contribute to this channel and this brand. And by donating, we will send you a Whiskey in the Writings tumbler glass so you can enjoy it with me, whatever you're drinking, whenever you're watching. So having said that, cheers. We're going to get started. All right. I love this quote. It comes from Bristol University Today. And this is on the question, what can historians say about the New Testament resurrection accounts? So what can historians say about the New Testament resurrection accounts? The topic we're talking about. And I love this statement that they say. Answer, not as much as Christians might want, but much more than skeptics might think. Not as much as Christians may want, but much more than what skeptics may think. That's why we're diving into this. This is a conversation I was introduced to years and years ago, and it's always stood out to me. In fact, almost every Easter, I share this somewhere, this content that I'm about to share with you somewhere to people. And I'm excited to share with you on this Easter of Whiskey in the Writings the same topic. So we're going to be talking about the historical reliability of a physical resurrection. That's a long statement. So that we're going to look at the historical reliability of a physical resurrection of Jesus. And so before we get into my main points that I want to pull away here, I want to say a couple clarifying things. First off, the research and the conversations that I'm having with you have been had before by people who have spent their life work having these conversations. And I stand on the shoulders of Dr. John Dixon out of Wheaton College. I also stand on the shoulders of N.T. Wright and Mike Lacana, people who have written at length about these subjects. And hopefully I can just present it to you in a way that's accessible and easy to understand. And if you're listening and you're a bit skeptical altogether of this whole religious thing, and the most skeptical thing to be the biggest thing I would say to be skeptical about would have to be the resurrection. Yeah, there's miracles from Jesus. Yeah, there's miraculous things that take place in the Old Testament, but nothing as crazy as believing that a dude a few thousand years ago, died brutally at the hands of Roman executors, and in 3 days later, resurrected from the dead, came back alive. That's just crazy. if you just think about it. So at first, I just want to say I stand on the shoulders of the research of people who have come before me. I also want to acknowledge how crazy this all sounds to even be talking about the is it reasonable to believe in a physical resurrection. And so I don't in any way believe that you can prove that Jesus resurrected. There is no DNA evidence. You can't, there's no video cam footage. We are left with the things that we're left with to discern whether or not something like this happened in real time and in real history, at least the way that they've been passed down to us. And so you can't prove it from a like a empirical evidence type of proof, but you can look at the things that we do know and ask, is it reasonable? Is it reasonable? So Webster defines reasonable as having sound judgment, fair and sensible. Having sound judgment, fair and sensible. So this is all we're doing here. We're asking the question, is it reasonable? Is it fair? Can you have sound judgment in regards to this conversation? Now you might immediately be saying, no, Joe, you can't, because it is impossible. It is an impossibility that once your brain dies and your heart dies, your heart stops beating, your brain's like all of these things for three consecutive days, like, no, it's not possible. But we have to wrestle with the information that we do have and ask, based off of that information, is it in fact reasonable? So this isn't about proving that the resurrection took place. This is about engaging our brains to go, did something happen? And I think that the answer to that is yes. I think that most historians, whether they're religious historians or secular historians, look at this time period and this specific moment, and they say something happened. Something happened around this guy and the belief that he came back to life that spearheaded something that we've never seen anywhere, ever in history. There has been no greater historical moment than what we have seen. When you look at all of the moments in history, there has been no movement that has been started from a one person's point of view that has changed the course of history the way that Jesus and the resurrection had done. And so something happened. It was like there was a dent made in history that Christian historians would say, well, we think it's the resurrection. Secular historians will say, well, we don't think it was the resurrection, but something certainly did happen. You can't ignore it. And so we're going to be looking at different portions of the text. We're going to be looking at extra biblical texts, and we're going to be wrestling with this question today. So that's my intro, and take a sip. Let's begin. Okay, point one comes from N.T. Wright. He was the first person that I heard articulate this argument. And it goes like this. There was no belief system in antiquity that promoted physical bodily resurrection concerning the afterlife. Okay, that's all to say that there has never been a belief system prior to the resurrection of Jesus that would have affirmed that that was something people could even do. So the argument, it goes like this, that this was actually, to believe that someone can do this would have been a new thought in human history. Now, we get new thoughts all the time. Fair enough. But it's enough to wrestle with, to go, when they said that Jesus resurrected, and when I say they, I'm talking about his followers, when they went around saying that Jesus came back to life and appeared to them bodily, physically, not as a ghost, not as some kind of in some platonic soul-like state, but actual physicality eats with them. They can touch him. They're having conversations with him. That would have been a new thing to share with someone. Like, people at this time would have been, they just didn't have categories for that. So for instance, let's take a look at a few different views of the afterlife in the ancient world at this time. So you have Greek views. So the Greco-Roman is kind of like this Hellenized combination of Greek and Roman religion. But when you look just at the Greek side of it, the Greek belief system, Homer who popularized that the underworld or the deep beneath where Hades, the brother of Zeus, and Poseidon and his wife reign over countless drifting crowds of shadowy figures. And so these are shades who have all kind of died. Maybe you've seen a movie where they get in the River Styx and there's just all like soul-like bodiless beings that are in the forever in Hades. There's really no belief system that someone would come back bodily and live out of that. And so, indeed, it goes on, indeed, the ghost of the great hero Achilles told Odysseus that he would rather be a poor serf on earth than lord of all the dead in the underworld. That's from the Odyssey 11:489-91. It was widely believed that when you die, your spirit departs and goes to the depths below. So that's in Greek thought. Plato came on the scene and he began to say this in his writings of the Republic. The purpose was to escape the forms of flesh and physicality and discover true forms that are truer than reality. And so the idea for Plato was that the physicality was something to escape, not something to come back to. And so there would not have been an aspiration of resurrection. There wouldn't have been a belief system of resurrection. So there were like Greco-Roman paralleled resurrection stories. So just to give you example, it's questionable if the pre-Jesus pagan resurrection accounts are actually referring to a resurrection. So in the accounts of Marduk, there's no clear death or resurrection mentioned. Adonis in the earliest versions contain no death or resurrection reports. His first death and resurrection accounts do not occur until about 150 AD. Osiris is conflicting accounts. Some accounts say that he is assigned to the underworld and others refer to him as the sun. However, there are no accounts or claims that Osiris rose from the dead. So the only account of a god who survived death that predates Christianity is found in Osiris. However, as mentioned above, like I just said, there are several versions of his story. So you have multiple accounts of it. In one, he's killed by his brother and he's cut into 14 pieces and scattered in Egypt. The goddess Isis then collects his part and brings him back to life, but she was only able to find 13 parts. So like in this coming back together, couldn't find everything. Furthermore, it's questionable whether Osiris was brought back to life on earth or seen by others. Like Jesus. Osiris descends and was given status in the underworld as the god of the mummies. Interesting, it's more of a zombification really than a resurrection, okay? And so this account isn't necessarily like the account that we have in Jesus. It's actually doing something different. There's a brief story in the Mithras that contains death and resurrection. However, there's no teaching in the early Mithras of neither his death nor the resurrection. And so, and really that belief system really flowered and became popular post-Christianity, not before Christianity. Okay, so that's a lot of information there. The idea here is that there may have been allusions to resurrection in the ancient world before Jesus. Most likely, they're not talking about it in the way that the New Testament authors talk about it. So it's not like this, that could be the claim of like the earliest followers of Jesus were just copying resurrection stories that they had heard around. And it's just not the same. It's not a parallel story. What's happening in the ancient world pre-Jesus is something very, very different than what the New Testament authors are proclaiming about what happened to Jesus. And so in the Greco-Roman world, there's real no comparison. What about the Jewish view of death? Okay, so in Judaism, you do have the belief of a resurrection. What's interesting, though, is that in Judaism, there was no belief system that someone would resurrect in real time and in real history. All resurrection in Judaism takes place at the end of the eon, of the age. At the end of the age, there will be a resurrection of the dead. But it was never thought that someone would actually resurrect within time and history before the end of the age. It's not until the Maccabean era did the notion of resurrection become popular. And so it's not even an ancient belief because ancient Judaism didn't even believe in a resurrection. So you find in Daniel chapter 12, verse 2, multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life, others to shame and everlasting contempt. And so you have these new ideas emerging. In Ezekiel chapter 37, you have the story of the Valley of the Dry Bones that gave notion to an end time kind of judgment and resurrection. But they did not believe, even in this pre or post Maccabean era time period, did they even believe that someone could do that in real time and in real history? Everything about the resurrection when it comes to Jewish belief system was an end time judgment where you were going to stand before God in judgment. So all of that to say, what caused a group of first century Galileans to start saying something that would have been completely new in human history? And this puzzles people. The historians, as N.T. Wright would say, historians look at this and they just go, we don't know what to make of it. We don't know. Whatever you want to say about the resurrection event, right? Whether you want to believe it or not, this is what we do know. That it was a brand new concept for them to promote this idea. And so you got to ask that question, right? Where'd that come from? All right, now maybe they made it up. Maybe they all just sat around and went, hey, we're going to say, you know, they're going, what can we say about this? And one guy goes, let's say he resurrected. And they're like, what are you talking about? All right, that's crazy enough. Let's go for it. But it's not likely. So that's point one. The belief in a resurrection was a new idea. Point number two is the eyewitness accounts of Jesus. And so it's one thing to say that people saw Jesus. We could argue that, whether or not they were lying or telling the truth. Here's a perspective I want you to wrestle with for a second. People don't tend to die for beliefs they know are lies. Okay? And one thing that you need to realize about this is all the accounts of the followers of Jesus, who we call the apostles, all but one of them died brutally at the hands of those who were persecuting them. Some were beaten and flogged to death. Some were burnt alive. Some were crucified upside down. Some were chopped to pieces. Some were speared to death. These people who went around saying that Jesus is alive, that he resurrected, all died proclaiming that. And so going back to here, think of the logic here. People die all the time for belief. People don't die for things that they know to be a lie. So if you have this handful of people and they are getting together, and they're going, what are we going to say about Jesus? How are we going to keep this thing going? Let's just say he resurrected. Okay, yeah. Let's start the story that he resurrected. And they're all in on it, right? They're like, okay, yeah, sure. That's great. Until you're facing death. Until someone is standing in front of you with a gun at your head saying, did this actually happen? I want you to deny it. And they go, I can't. And then they're dead. So whatever you want to say about these eyewitnesses, we need to reconcile the fact that they died for this belief. And if it was all just made up and one big lie, like maybe one or two, maybe even 10, would all of them have done that? Someone would have cracked. For sure, someone would have given in and went, no, this is, I'm okay, you got us. It's all fake. We made it up. So that's something that you got to consider, and you go, like, that's weird, right? They all died for this. Many died for this. The other parts of the eyewitness account, excluding the reality of how they went to their death believing this, is the inclusion of peoples whose voices didn't matter. And of course, I'm talking about in the ancient world, and sometimes in our modern world, unfortunately, the women. The women. The women are a part of this story. Now you might go, oh, okay, Joe, why is that a big deal? Let's get to that. All of the accounts of the resurrection of Jesus tell us that the first people to encounter the resurrected Jesus were women. Okay, they were the first ones to encounter and engage with Jesus, and the first ones to proclaim to the rest of the men that Jesus had resurrected, had indeed resurrected. And so in the stories, you have the women experiencing the resurrected Jesus, running to go tell the disciples. They don't believe the women, and they themselves go and check and verify it. Now, that's a weird story, right? Why would this be in the story like this? And this reality has actually puzzled historians. Why did they include women? Well, let's look at what we knew. What we know how women were viewed and treated in the first century. There is the first century historian Josephus. He's a Jewish historian. And in his book, The Antiquities, book 4, 219, says that the testimony of a woman is inadmissible in court. So Josephus, the Jewish historian, is telling us that women didn't even have a place to come to court and their voice be something that could be used in the court of law, which means if a woman saw a crime happen and the person that the crime happened to took the other guy to court and wanted to use the only witness of a woman, her voice wouldn't be credible in the law of court, right? They she wouldn't be able to say, yeah, I saw this happen and this is what happened. They would dismiss her as being an unreliable witness. That's just how it was. So the fact that all of the gospels tell us that women were the first ones to witness, to proclaim what they saw, that would have been very radical to include that in the story. How about this? In the Odyssey, Zeus punishes the house of Atreus because it accepted the counsel of women. Okay, Plato said in the Republic that the punishment for cowardly men is that they be reborn as women. Aristotle said that the woman is an imperfect human being. This is how they were viewed in the ancient world. They were less than in the ancient world. And so, why would you include women in the story of the witnessing of the resurrection if their voices didn't matter? Let me put it a different way. If I was writing in the first century and I wanted to convince you of something that took place, I wouldn't use women as my primary sources. If I lived in the ancient world, you know, I'd like to think I would. But people didn't do that. So why are they included in the way that they're included in the Gospels? Because they wouldn't have done that unless it was embarrassingly true, right? They were just being honest with the story, even to the fact that that would have been embarrassing. That would have been something that people might have scoffed at when they read it. Well, if women were the ones to see him, you can't trust that. And yet, it was what happened. So, whatever you want to believe about the resurrection, again, we're talking about, we're not proof texting it. We're just going, is it reasonable? Is there enough happening behind the scenes that make us go, yeah, maybe there's something there. Where does this leave us in this story? Well, the thing that we've got to reconcile is that there is something happening here that seems to stand out that ought to cause us to really take a second look at this story. And here's the question. Is this enough? Is this enough to convince you that this is something worth looking into? The thing about faith, is that it's never really fully convincing. And if it was fully convincing, then what would be the need to have faith? So there's something about this that leaves us going, yeah, we can't prove it without, verifiable evidence, but we can look at what took place and, or at least what was recorded, and to say, from the evidence we have, this is interesting, that something took place. We can look at what was left behind in these stories and begin to, with reason, with sound judgment, say that something interesting happened here. Now, what you want to do with that, that's up to you. If you're a skeptic watching this and you're going, Joe, I'm on the fence of believing about this whole Jesus thing, I just invite you to this week, as we approach Easter coming up on Sunday, I just encourage you this week to think about these things, to read the story told at the end of the four biographies of Jesus about what happened at his death and at his resurrection, and really, really sit on the reality that, one, this was a new concept in human history. There's nothing that parallels it, this idea that someone could resurrect in real time and in real place. Two, these people who wrote these stories and proclaimed that he resurrected died for that claim, died for that belief. And three, the way that they wrote the story goes against the grains of culture at that time, which means something that they wrote, they were willing to risk embarrassment or being laughed at or being just completely ignored altogether because of the way that they wrote the story and who they included in the story. These are just three of many more things that we could look at when we examine the resurrection. But what I want you to sit with here as we close out, we want evidence, to believe things, don't we? We want there to be like I said earlier, like DNA evidence or some sort of video cam footage that we can look back and go, oh, I see when that happened. That's the kind of evidence we want today because we're modern people with modern technologies to do those things. But they didn't have those things in the first century, did they? Right? This is a time and a place that didn't have the advancements of technologies that we have. So we can't impose my desire for evidence on an ancient culture. It's just not fair. Okay, we can't do that. So what we have to do is we have to actually look at what the evidence is and what kind of evidence would there be, right? What kind of evidence would you expect to find if an event like this took place? Let me say that again. What kind of evidence would you expect to find if a resurrection event like this took place? And what you find is the evidence we do have is exactly the kind of evidence you would expect to find from an event like this in the first century. A completely new thought, an idea, people willing to die for that idea and sharing the truth of what happened in that idea, even if it risks shame and embarrassment. This is the kind of evidence you would expect to find in the first century if an event like this took place. So at the beginning of the video, I asked this question, is it reasonable to believe in a physical resurrection? I think the answer is yes. And I think it's worth your time to investigate more. So having said that, thank you for joining us today on this special Easter edition. I hope you enjoy your Easter day. If you want to engage more in conversation with me, I'd love to hear from you. Like, subscribe, comment, leave me your feedback, and let's talk more. Thanks for joining me on Whiskey in the Writings. Have a great week. Cheers.